The breathing helped Cody relax. She ran right down the middle of the street and took huge gulps of air, each breath serving to calm her down. The town was silent, the streets empty, but the quiet actually scared her even more. It reminded her of those eerie moments before an earthquake, when all the birds and insects and animals disappear to somewhere safer. Where do they all go? And how do they even know? Maybe they all had a mother like Cody's, the type of mom who would, without any warning, sometimes give you a look that sent shivers down your spine. Cody always wondered what was in that look, that weird combination of love and hope mixed with something much darker. She had come to sense that it was guilt, guilt over the choice her mom had made for her, a choice that, in hindsight, was putting Cody in danger now. Cody didn't see it that way, but it still made her uncomfortable. As they sat together watching their old boxy television, waiting, like everyone else, to hear the news, she felt her mom staring at her with that look. So Cody grabbed her tattered sneakers, threw on a faded t-shirt, and slipped out the door. Running was always easier than talking. When she ran, she could breathe.
"I can smell him. I can smell him on the air right here in our hotel, and it's Christmas. We're talking about a $300 bill for the carpet alone."
"Now, mother," said Carter. She gave a dainty little cough into her fist.
"This carpet cleaned isn't going to cost us less than $200, she declared. "I'm sure of it."
"Cleaned," said Clint now. "Replaced, more like. And that's not mentioning what he's done to the bathroom and the door. We're talking $500 worth of damage here." Well, Carter didn't look too sure about the figure, and I knew for a fact that it was bullshit. All it'd take for them bullet holes was a jar of spackling and a can of paint and an afternoon. Hell, I'd have done it myself if they let me. But then you have to pick your battles, don't you? And I knew half a grand was getting off easy. And besides, I thought to myself as a fearful moan gone through my chest, you're already 35 grand in the hole. 500 would have been the last of Jake's severance pay, the only money I had in the world unless I could figure out a way to boost that busted TV set. Couldn't think how, though. Not right then. An evil weariness had come over me. I had drunk and screwed too much. I had scrapped and fought and run around too much. I had lived too much. Too much and too long. And a crazy idea split my whole head open now. Take a run at old Clint. See what happens. Like I said, most days I wish I had. "I can pay you," I told them. "Hell, I'll pay you 3 times that much. I just need to find that girl. She's run off with all the money I had on me." Well, the three of them just sat there a minute, Carter's face tired, and his wife's a little frightened, and her brother's sharky and mean.
"Say you do find her," Clint said now. "How are we supposed to know you'll come back?"
Standing up took all the juice I had left in me. I pointed to Carter, to the pocket of his bathrobe, where the grip of the Luger was sticking up like a gray bone.
Cody stood motionless, staring at James. He stood on the side of the river staring back at her. The dam burned in between them, crumbling into the water. "Go," she saw him say, as he held his hands up to his heart. Then Kai grabbed her arm, started running, and pulled her with him into the air over the river. They landed with a vicious thud and a splash, but managed to scramble out of the rapids. Cody tried to turn around, but Kai pulled her up into the tree line. With enough cover to avoid getting shot, Cody finally looked back for James. The Equality agents were almost on top of him, and James had knelt down and raised his arms in surrender. The agents surrounded him, guns pointed at his head. Cody covered her mouth in horror when she recognized one of the civilians who had pursued them alongside the Equality team. It was Michael. She saw James' face when he looked up and found his brother pointing a gun at him. It was a picture of total devastation, and her heart broke for him. Then James turned to search for Cody across the river. Amid the chaos of the roaring fire, the swirling smoke, the falling ash, the raging rapids, and the shouting agents, their eyes met for one final moment. They were far away and only had a second to communicate before someone pulled a bag over his head. But Cody stared deep into his eyes and knew that James understood. The Industrial Revolution started in England. Its first success was to revolutionize the production of cotton cloth using new machines powered by water wheels and later by steam engines. Mechanization of cotton production massively increased the productivity of workers in first, textiles, and subsequently, other industries. The engine of technological breakthroughs throughout the economy was innovation, spearheaded by new entrepreneurs and businessmen eager to apply their new ideas. This initial flowering soon spread across the North Atlantic to the United States. People saw the great economic opportunities available in adopting the new technologies developed in England. They were also inspired to develop their own inventions. We can try to understand the nature of these inventions by looking at who was granted patents. The patent system, which protects property rights in ideas, was systematized in the Statute of Monopolies legislated by the English Parliament in 1623, partially as an attempt to stop the king from arbitrarily granting letters patent to whomever he wanted, effectively granting exclusive rights to undertake certain activities or businesses. The striking thing about the evidence on patenting in the United States is that people who were granted patents came from all sorts of backgrounds and all walks of life, not just the rich and the elite.